This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, January 4th, 2024. And today will be better than yesterday. On this show, where baseless accusations will be challenged. I'm Buster Olien, working from my home in Montana. Taylor Schwenk is in the Schwenk Studios back in Connecticut. Taylor, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. I'm fresh off covering the Rose Bowl for the Game Day podcast. Here's a baseless accusation for you. You had a terrible time in Japan, didn't you?
You had a great time in Japan. And I will say this. I was surprised. I thought when we go to Japan that everywhere, and I know we're not talking about, it's not baseball season, so maybe this will change once baseball season begins. I thought for sure the country was going to be overrun by Dodger caps. And I will tell you that most of the caps that I saw in Japan were Yankee caps. I saw a smattering of others. I thought for sure after the Ohtani signings, the Yamamoto signings, that we'd see a ton of Dodger caps. Does that surprise you?
That it surprises me a little, but it's been a relatively short amount of time. I think maybe if you went in a year from now, it might be different. I mean, but also the Yankee cap supremacy is hard to dislodge. I commend the Dodgers are going to try, but that's going to be tough.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you this, like if you went past newsstands, there are all kinds of pictures of Yamamoto, all kinds of pictures of Ohtani. So it will get geared up. And I did see at the Tokyo airport that we flew out of, the displays they had, the mannequins they had Dodger caps on. So that wave is coming.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe the Yankees will be challenged at some point with their, you know, cap supremacy. All right, some news and notes to talk about today. Just before we went on air and began taping with Hembo, we got news that Chris Sale signed an extension. They basically tore up his old contract that he had with the Boston Red Sox before he agreed to that trade last week to Atlanta. He winds up getting in this contract with the Atlanta Braves. In 2024, he's going to make $16 million. In 2025, he's going to make $22 million. In 2026, there's a club option that the Braves hold for $18 million. They are betting big that he's going to be healthy moving forward. And I'll also explain why I think this is a good deal for the Braves, but also for the Boston Red Sox. Toronto Blue Jays finalized a two-year, $15 million deal with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. They re-signed Kevin Kiermaier to a one-year contract. So if you're wondering if the Blue Jays are going to have big upgrades on their offense, the answer is no. Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Blue Jays, spoke with reporters on Wednesday, and he talked about being very disappointed that Shohei Ohtani chose the Dodgers over the Blue Jays. Speaking of the Red Sox, Lucas Giolito signed a two-year, $38.5 million deal with Boston. It's kind of a great structure for him because if he has a good year, he will have the option to opt out of his contract after 2024. Prosecutors in the Dominican Republic presented the Wander Franco case to a judge on Wednesday. The judge is going to rule on Friday. Wander Franco is accused of commercial sexual exploitation and money laundering following allegations that the Rays shortstop had a relationship with a minor whose mother also faces the same charges. Prosecutors requested that a judge hold Franco on an $86,000 bond, bar him from leaving the Dominican Republic, and place him under house arrest. We're going to learn more about the resolution of this probably on Friday. Korean relief pitcher Woo-Suk Go signed with the Padres on a two-year, $4.5 million deal. It's expected that he will be their closer. Mike Schilt will not have a traditional bench coach on his staff as he takes over as manager of the San Diego Padres. Some interesting opt-outs that Yoshinobu Yamamoto has in his $325 million deal with the Dodgers that are tied to whether or not he has Tommy John surgery. The Reds continue to be aggressive in this offseason. They signed Frankie Montas to a one-year, $16 million deal. And we got news from Andrelton Simmons, the four-time Gold Glove award-winning shortstop, announced his retirement after 11 years in the big leagues. And some big names remain unsigned in the free agent market. Blake Snell, two-time Cy Young Award winner, coming off a season in which he posted a 2.25 ERA, unsigned. Jordan Montgomery helped to lead the Rangers to a World Series title, unsigned. Cody Bellinger, NL MVP in 2019, unsigned. Josh Hader, one of the best closers in history, is unsigned. Another piece of news is I was going through some of these notes. We just heard that Harrison Bader has signed a one-year, $10.5 million deal to be the center fielder of the New York Mets, who should have a very strong defensive outfield in 2024. Taylor, what else you got?
Wow, Buster, we take a week off and the news is flowing. Good show ahead today. If you're looking for something else to listen to, friends, check out the College Game Day podcast. We did a bunch of shows from the Rose Bowl, including two short 13-minute, 7-minute recaps of the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. You can check those out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can listen on YouTube, where later today, that is Thursday, January 4th, that we will be posting a full championship preview. We're going to do another one Saturday. So tons of content around the national championship game. That's the College Game Day podcast with Reese Davis and Pete Thamel.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, of course, is Paul Embiakides, the highest paid right-hand man in all of professional sports. $701 million contract. Hembo, I'm still amazed by your ability to pull off that kind of payoff, you know?
And someday, Buster, my ancestors will be amazed by the shrewd negotiating of Taylor Schwenk and all of the high-power people at my agency. I won't see a cent of that income at some point during my life, but hopefully someday, when college costs $2 million a year, my great-great-great-grandchildren will actually be able to go because of my contract.
And, you know, the good thing is, from the pod perspective, we can start getting return on investment right now. You might have to wait until, what did we figure out, the year 2148? That's when you get your return on investment. Our return on investment starts today. When we talk about topics that you sent, including some New Year's resolutions, but let's start with the trade that the Atlanta Braves and Boston Red Sox made last week. And from what I understand, the Braves have been trying to get Chris Sale at the trade deadline. Like, they had been sort of fishing around this potential idea of bringing Sale out of Boston. I think in the end, when you look at it from the Braves' perspective, they're essentially, they bet Vaughn Grissom and $10 million, that's their share of the salary that they're going to pay for Chris Sale for 2024, that Sale will be healthy, that he will be productive. And they also, if in fact that's the case, they also have a very affordable $20 million option, which could wind up replacing Charlie Morton in 2025, his deal.
Yeah, I think Alex Anthopoulos acquiring what I would describe as a distressed Chris Sale is a masterclass, right? A masterclass in asset management. Obviously, it goes without saying, it is all about health. Whether or not Chris Sale is healthy, that will determine whether or not this was worth the risk. It's 41 starts in the last 4 years. But from a performance standpoint, don't let that inflated ERA last year fool you. I mean, he's pitching with the worst defense in baseball behind him, and there was no pitcher in baseball, not one single pitcher, that logged at least 100 innings that had both a better strikeout and walk rate than Chris Sale did. The velocity is going to be there. The shape of that slider is going to be there. And while I do think that Vaughn Grissom can mash, or at least could mash, he can't play shortstop. And this is Atlanta trading from a position of strength, as you said, betting on the talent. If Chris Sale is Chris Sale, from basically August on this year, this is going to be a trade absolutely worth making, because that is the single biggest reason why the Braves failed in the playoffs the last couple of years, is because they've not gotten good enough starting pitching. And when Chris Sale is Chris Sale, he is as lights out as anybody in the sport. And I could see him making a resurgence this season pitching in Atlanta.
And Hembo, maybe he does turn out to be Chris Sale, right? Maybe he has moments when he goes back to being that dominant guy. We know he's known as a great clubhouse guy. He's incredibly accountable. He's incredibly competitive. Maybe on certain days he'll have that stuff to be that old guy. But you know what? If he's just a mediocre pitcher, let's say he puts up a 4.20 ERA and he has 180 innings pitching in a rotation behind Max Fried, behind Spencer Strider, behind Charlie Morton, he's essentially the number four, number five type guy. For that kind of cost, $10 million in salary, that's a bargain.
I mean, financially, it is an absolute no-brainer, and it also reinforces the enormous value of having the kind of player development pipeline that the Braves can produce. The fact that they can just float out Vaughn Grissom out there for a Hall of Fame arm and not lose a single thing in their lineup is absurd. But it's exactly what the Braves do better than anyone else in baseball. And if you told me that Chris Sale was going to start 25 games this year and that Chris Sale was going to be Chris Sale this year, that's an all-star level arm. I actually disagree with your thesis there. Sure, I think even if he is a league average starting pitcher, it's probably worth a trade because of the volume of innings and because of the prospects of him looking like Chris Sale in the playoffs. But if Chris Sale's healthy, at least lately, he's never been an average pitcher. Never. Even last year with a 4.3 ERA, his FIP was half a run below that. Again, pitching in front of the worst defense in baseball in a pretty pitcher-friendly ballpark. I think that Chris Sale's going to shove this year in Atlanta, and it's going to be a reason why they advance further in the playoffs than they did last year, providing his health.
And you know what? I think the Braves didn't make a mistake that the Cardinals have made over and over and over again in recent years, and that they're being decisive about one of their young players. They watched Vaughn Grissom. They determined, internally, they decided, you know what? He's not going to be a major league shortstop. Defense potentially is going to be a problem, but he's going to be a good major league player for a long time. If you told me Vaughn Grissom plays, 10 to 12 years in the big leagues, that wouldn't be a surprise to me. He's a good offensive player. He's a great kid. Like, if you talk to him, you can tell he's very open-minded. I sat in on a session he had with Ron Washington when they did the infield drills. And Grissom is like a sponge, but it's going to take time for him with his defense. I think offensively, he's going to be a good player. And that's why I think that's a good deal for the Red Sox, too, especially with the recent history with Chris Sale. Because you know, and I know, every time anything happened with Chris Sale, the reaction in Boston, and I'm not saying this is unreasonable, by the way, reaction in Boston was, yep, here we go again.
It was never a fit. It was never a fit. And while I agree with you that it is very likely worth the risk, if you will, worth the trade for Boston, because Vaughn Grissom has an outstanding minor league track record when it comes to his bat to ball and his swing decisions. There's no one better at self-scouting than the Atlanta Braves are. So when I saw Vaughn Grissom included in this trade, what that told me is this guy is unlikely to hit his 100th percentile outcome, because if he was going to, then I don't think the Braves would be trading him for Chris Sale with 1 year left on his deal.
Yeah, they probably be putting him in left field, but they bet on Jared Kelnick and his talent out there. I think that, unlike the Cardinals, who waited too long on so many of their guys to make decisions to the point that they hemorrhaged value, right now Vaughn Grissom has a lot of value because he has a lot of team control and he's a good young player, and so they flip him. All right, Lucas Giolito signs with the Red Sox. I like this deal for Giolito. I like the deal for the Red Sox. What about you?
Me too. I think the outcome of this deal will be largely determined by whether or not, very simply, he can keep the baseball in the ballpark, full stop. It was 41 home runs he allowed last year that led the American League. That is an inflated total. One out of every 20 plate appearances resulted in a home run. That is not a formula that can work in today's game, given the launch angle phenomenon. So if the Red Sox were to consult me and ask me, what might we modify his pitch mix to maximize performance at this juncture in his career? He's still on the right side of 30. I'd major in the slider. I'd major in the changeup. I'd minor in the four-seam fastball, because it's pretty clear what he needs is to live more horizontally than vertically. He's not going to miss the same bats that he missed 3, 4, 5 years ago when he was absolutely outstanding. What he needs to chase is not swing and miss. It's suppressed contact. That's what I would do. It's actually a much more favorable ballpark than in Chicago from the perspective of home run allowance. So that definitely could play into his favor. I think it's a decent signing there. $20 million a year is a lot, I guess, in baseball terms. But you and I both know that if Chris Sale, if Lucas Giolito makes 60 starts over the next 2 years, even if he's league average, he will provide that value because those innings, which he's been healthy, he has been durable, are super valuable. So I say keep the baseball off the barrel as much as possible, and it will be a deal that they are happy that they made, and a deal that I think will enable him to build up his value to such an extent that 2 years from now, he'll get more than $20 million a year.
And I'm kind of excited to see what the Red Sox come up with pitching going forward, right? That's going to be where maybe the excellence of Craig Breslow begins to manifest, where he's good at picking out pitchers. He's good at coming up with plans. He's good at coming up with adjustments. And Giolito has demonstrated he's open-minded. Like, you know, the way that he shortened his arm path in his delivery tells you that he will listen to people who have things to bring to him. And I'm sure that the Red Sox will do that.
Yes. I mean, if you had told me 2 years ago that you could sign Lucas Giolito, the 2 years 40, which is effectively what this is, I would have said you're crazy. This is a player that I would have assumed could get a nine-figure contract because we've seen like the top of the food chain for him, and that's rare. And he's been healthy. Like, we're not dealing with a pitcher, at least of late, that has dealt with the kind of injuries that I'm all that worried about. And if he has demonstrated coachability, as you just described, for lack of a better term, given the fact that we've seen that canvas be beautiful, like not that long ago, If the Red Sox can do that, if the Red Sox can identify people and use their self-scouting and use their pitch design people and use all those sort of analytics-y, if you will, type things to modify what pitchers can do, you could see this guy on like down ballot Cy Young type stuff. I mean, he definitely has that kind of arm, but ultimately I think that's going to be what it comes down to. Can they modify that pitch mix enough that he can limit the home runs? If he can limit, let's say, if he allows fewer than 30 home runs next season, I think right. He could be an all-star caliber pitcher. I think that's the sort of magic number for me, 29 and a half.
All right. We are only about halfway through the winter, and yet we already know who's going to wear the crown of the offseason winner, the Dodgers, who spent more money for free agents than all the other teams combined. But the team that's has had the worst offseason, I think there's some serious competition. The Giants are in that conversation. I think the Red Sox before the last week, they would have been in that conversation. And the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, had such a disappointing offense in 2023. And they took a shot at Shohei Ohtani. It's a little bit surprising to hear the comments saying, yeah, we thought we had a real shot at him. And I'm like, well, you know, I know it's 2020 hindsight at this point, but I'm like, I mean, we thought all year that the Dodgers were going to be the leader to get Ohtani. And so it feels like that they should have treated the Blue Jays should have treated Ohtani like a lottery ticket. Right. Go and you make your offer. You see if you interest them. But it feels like that so much was built around that pursuit, because now what we're hearing from Ross Atkins, the general manager, is, okay, they re-signed Kevin Kiermaier, they signed Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and they're not really going to do much else. Maybe add one more player. They're probably going to wait for prices to drop. What he said yesterday to me was code for, yeah, we're not going to pay Cody Bellinger. Man, they are basically betting that an offense that was below average last year is going to have guys bounce back, whether George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Dalton Varsho, you know, that group. It to me is asking a lot.
I don't like the way that this lineup is built. I just don't. Every move they have made, Buster, over the last two off seasons has been centered on defense over offense. You mentioned Kevin Kiermaier, we're bringing him back. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, that is his thing. He can play multiple positions, but he can't hit worth a lick. That's not what they need. What they need are bangers. What they need are mashers. What they need are players that can swing the win probability of a game with one hack. They don't have enough of those. By the way, their best hitter last year was Brandon Belt, who's a free agent. There are a couple numbers here, Buster, that I think really demonstrate how badly the Blue Jays need home run hitters. So last season, this was a team that went 9-54 when they allowed five or more runs. That was the second worst record in baseball. This was a team that went 15-61 when they allowed four or more runs. That was the second worst record in baseball. How can you win? If the answer is only one way, you have no shot. And unless Vlad Jr. is going to be the player that we sort of envisioned or imagined that he might be, this lineup is pathetic. You're looking at a team that won't make the playoffs next year, and you're looking at a team that could theoretically finish last, dead last in the American League East, because you can't carry your weight in that division if you can't hit. Right now, the Blue Jays cannot hit. I don't like what they've done with this team. I don't like the way that things are shaking out for them next year. And you're probably going to see some sort of natural regression of the mean with some of those starters too. And if so, you're not looking at a team that's going to sniff October.
And it's interesting because if you put that rotation in October, if they somehow got into the playoffs, they would be dangerous. You know, just because of the excellence of starting pitching. And I say this too, you mentioned about the need for bangers. I don't think there's a downside to bringing Joey Votto into camp. They should be the team that should sign Toronto native Joey Votto to a minor league contract with an invite to spring training. It's clear from Votto's, messaging on social media that he's very motivated. He's looking for another opportunity. He's a high on base percentage guy. In a bad year, he's going to have, 320 on base percentage at his very worst. He hit some home runs last year. Why not bring him into spring training, see what you see, and sort of treat it the way the Mariners did with Ichiro in his last year, where they're like, look, we're bringing you back. We just want to be on the same page. If it doesn't go well, this might be what happens at the end of spring training. Maybe, we wind up releasing you. Maybe you go down and play in the minor leagues for a while. What say you about that? But they seem like with the way their lineup is now, with their particular needs, with an opening at DH, absolutely go get him.
It makes a lot of sense. And even if you exclude the fact that Toronto plays in Canada, which is obviously where Joey Votto was from, I like this for two reasons. This is not an idea that I'd consider, but I like this for two reasons. The first of which is obvious. If Joey Votto is invested and is anything approximating himself, he's going to be a value positive player in your lineup. Yep. And we just demonstrated how badly they need one of those. Secondly, and this is not in any way to suggest that Vlad Jr. lacks any level of professionalism or anything of the kind, but you could do a lot worse from the perspective of a mentor, from the perspective of a team leader, from the perspective of a professional than putting Joey Votto at first base with Vlad Jr. in spring training, because those conversations would be really meaningful. And the conversations and the batting cage would be really, really meaningful. That's a player in Vlad Jr. that has an MVP barrel. But he doesn't have an MVP brain right now when it comes to the way that he approaches his at-bats. And in my lifetime, you can count on one hand the number of players that I have seen have better at-bats in Major League Baseball than Joey Votto. So I love the idea, if nothing else, to give Vlad Jr. the opportunity to learn from Joey Votto by osmosis.
Yeah, I've told you that I've told Joey that he should be the guy who writes the follow-up to The Science of Hitting by Ted Williams, because that's his understanding. He's so smart. And again, Joey would totally get it. If you were to have that conversation, Joey would love to have you in camp, but we want to acknowledge the possibility that this is not going to work out. I think he's one of the players who would completely get that and work with you on it. All right. So the reason why you're a $701 million man is because you come up with these great concepts. Okay. You sent me a list of resolutions for the New Year's. Let's go down the list. We got about 5 minutes to go. Dodgers will approach, if not exceed, 1,000 runs. You've kicked this around before. You love this.
I think this is a very fascinating idea. I don't know why exactly. It was the 1999 Cleveland Indians that last did this. But I think the Dodgers this year could do this. Not only do they have three Hall of Fame hitters hitting 1, 2, 3 in their order, but they actually have the depth, or could have the requisite depth, when you consider the second third of that lineup, if you will, to actually pull this off. In a division that I think will have exceedingly weak pitching, I don't know that they'll be able to chase this down. But with the National League now obviously having the DH, this is not a thing that a National League team really could do. It had been 70 years since the National League team had done it. I think the Dodgers have the chance to have one of the best lineups ever. If you give me 150 games from Ohtani, Mookie, and Freddie, and the other guys in that lineup hit, I would say to their 50 to 70th percentile outcome, 1,000 runs is on the list of options for the Dodgers. What say you?
That would be fun. No doubt about it. Obviously, the question, as we talked about with Chris Sale, is going to be health. Jackson Holliday, breaking camp with the Orioles to jumpstart his Rookie of the Year campaign. 3 years ago, this would not be something the Orioles would consider, but I think with the new CBA and the fact that you can be rewarded for starting an elite prospect in the big leagues is a reason why this is going to happen. What say you?
I have a man crush on Jackson Holliday, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm a happily married man. I have two kids. But when you watch this guy hit, Buster, it is a sight to behold. Any kid that young who can play shortstop with an even strikeout to walk ratio is someone for whom I adore. And Jackson Holliday at this age, with that minor league track record, I think is on a rocket to the freaking moon. I want to see him on the opening day roster. And I think if he can get there, I think you're looking at least a league average hitter to start the season. By the second half, when he hits his groove, he will absolutely be someone who can produce maybe 3-5 WAR for the Orioles and be a big reason why they win 100 games again.
You desperately want Mike Trout to ask the Angels to trade him. I don't see a path for that to happen because I can't imagine Artie Moreno being convinced. Yeah, it makes sense that we would eat many tens of millions of dollars to facilitate a trade someplace else. But you want and maybe think it can happen.
I desperately want and think it can happen. And candidly, the Angels owe it to Mike Trout. I don't know that Artie Moreno sees it that way. I happen to agree with you. He would very likely not see it that way. But a capital B baseball deserves to see Mike Trout with an opportunity to play in October. And Mike Trout has given his blood, sweat, and tears to an organization that has only handed him losses, that has not done what is necessary to surround him with the requisite talent to have any chance to succeed at a time in which, by the way, he also had Babe Ruth on his freaking team in his prime for the last 3 years. So I would love nothing more than to see Mike Trout healthy playing on a team, with a contending team, perhaps even on the East Coast closer to home. And I think if he went to the front office and did so quietly, given the track record, given the equity built up, they should absolutely honor that request.
Yeah, and if anyone's wondering if we're questioning the acumen of Artie Moreno as owner, I think the track record speaks for itself. Last one for you, got about 45 seconds. You're looking for a full breakout from one particular Minnesota Twin infielder.
Royce Lewis can absolutely get like down ballot MVP consideration if he gives me 150 games. I mean, it's a 149 OPS plus in his career to date. It's two total bases a game. He hits a grand slam every week, it seems like. And in the playoffs last year, he was one of my favorite breakout stars. I mean, he is an absolute freak at the plate. And honestly, if he and Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton, I love what I saw from Edward Julian last year too, that can be a much better lineup than people realize. And it can be because of him. This is one of the 10 best hitters in the American League. If he qualifies for the batting title, he's got the power. He's got the ability to spray it gap to gap. There's enough swing and miss avoidance for him to be able to pull it off over the course of a full season. I think he is a breakout star waiting to happen. The former number one overall pick in the draft. So we know he has a talent. It's just a matter of him staying on the field. Give me 500 plate appearances, Royce Lewis. If you give those to me, I think you're going to have a monster season.
Hembo, thanks for doing this. Keep avoiding unfounded accusations.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm doing great. How are you, Buster?
I'm doing great. I sent you pictures from when I was in Japan. We saw snow monkeys. I knew you would love those creatures. There were like hundreds running around there, Sarah. They're like adolescents using this this netting they had to keep boulders from coming down the hill. And they were using that netting like a trampoline. They're just such amazing creatures.
Oh my goodness, the photos were really, really cool. And they were so cute, yeah. Obviously a preference for dogs, but I'll take the monkeys as a backup for sure.
Well, I'll send you Quinny the video later today because she's sitting at my feet like dying for me to take her back outside for another session of ball. All right, just first impressions. I was talking with Hembo about this Chris Sale trade. I really liked it for both sides. There's not a lot of trades where I'm like, yeah, I love it for both sides, but I kind of love this trade for both the Red Sox and the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really fascinating gamble by the Braves, but I don't blame them for doing it with what they're paying for him and the potential. I mean, we know who Chris Sale can be. And I was looking back at his numbers from last year, and I think people forget that prior to being injured again, he was really figuring out how to be Chris Sale without that elite velocity. We see this with pitchers who figure out how to be a different pitcher later in their career. He had very high chase rate, and he seemed to be really pitching, not just throwing. So I love it. And, you know, the Braves have that kind of race thing about them, too, where when they get a guy, you know they're seeing something, and I really trust they can make it work.
So this is an interesting structure. It's so similar to what Charlie Morton has had with them. As you and I were talking at this text message, his deal is the first year, $16 million, the second year, $22 million, and then in 2026, there's an $18 million club option. There's no deferred money. There's no buyout on this contract. So this is substantially about $18 million more in guaranteed money over what he had with the Red Sox. They are banking on him being healthy. And what's interesting to me about that, I mentioned Charlie Morton. Well, Chris Sale is represented by the same agent as Charlie Morton, who represents Charlie Morton, who represents Chipper Jones, who represents Matt Olson. So I guess if you know, you want to be the Atlanta Braves, B.B. Abbott seems to be one of the avenues through which to go, the longtime agent. All right, let's play the numbers game. And because Taylor is not joining us throughout the show, I'm going to be the one who says number three.
Number three is 59.5. So, you know, January, it's top 10 season. So I've been digging deep on a ton of starting pitchers, and I won't reveal who's in my top 10. But one guy I was taking a very hard look at was Kodai Senga. We heard about the ghost fork pitch as he came over from Japan. We saw it in action, how good it was. And I didn't even think to look into this until a couple of weeks ago. So a 59.5% whiff rate on swings against his ghost whip. That means basically 60% of the time when you swung at that pitch, you were going to miss. That was the highest for any starter against any single pitch in a season since we've been tracking pitches, which goes back to 2008, with a minimum of at least 200 swings. And we knew in this season that it was a really good pitch for him, but I did not realize no starter had ever had a season with the pitch the way he did with the ghost fork last year.
Number two
is 1.20. So yesterday I saw you were tweeting a bit about Blake Snell. And the moment I saw you tweet about his opponent batting average and how good he was in that respect and not allowing runs in, what was it, 12 of his starts, I knew I had a really good note to kind of add on to that. So that is this. He had a 1.20 ERA in his final 23 starts of the season. There are only four pitchers since ERA became official. Both leagues in 1913 have an ERA at least that low in a single season, 23 starts span. There are Bob Gibson in 1968, Grover Cleveland Alexander in 1915, and Walter Johnson and Dutch Leonard in 1914. So the takeaway there is they're all, I mean, one of them is before the mound was lower. And the others are all in the dead ball era. And yes, if you look in the innings totals, obviously Blake Snell threw a lot fewer innings in his 23 starts. But even so, the fact that Jake Arrieta, Jacob Degrom, Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, whoever else you may think of, I mean, Doc Gooden and so many others did not do this in that span tells you something about how dominant he was.
Number one
is 36.8%. So another guy taking a very hard look at is Spencer Strider. We talked about this a lot. We had him pitch, I believe, twice on Sunday Baseball this past season. He ended the season with a 36.8% strikeout rate. So we look at the highest strikeout rates in the qualified season, and we take out 2020, since that was a pretty short season. There are only three guys ahead of him who had higher strikeout rates in a single season. That was Gerrit Cole in 2019, Pedro Martinez in 1999, and Randy Johnson in 2001. So Spencer Strider had the fourth highest strikeout rate we have ever seen in a qualified season. They won more than 60 games, and we know how dominant he was in that respect with swing and miss and with strikeouts.
All right, Sarah. So I know you'll see occasionally some of the tweets that I'll send out. And before I went to Japan, I sent out some tweets on Jacob deGrom and about his pure level of dominance. And of course, leads to the question of whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. And for me, and I've told you before, I stopped voting years ago because I think the Hall of Fame system is broken. They need to fix it. They need to make adjustments with it. But I can still give an opinion on whether or not I think someone's a Hall of Famer. And for me, Jacob deGrom is a Hall of Famer. And I get so much response where fans are saying, boy, he hasn't pitched enough innings. There haven't been enough years where he made a ton of starts. There's been too many injuries. For you, do you think of Jacob deGrom as being a Hall of Famer?
I do, but I want to see more. He was so dominant during that stretch, as you're saying, so good. That was a Hall of Fame stretch of career. But if he finishes with 10 years, and I know how pitcher in, but the starts he made in 2023 are what made him eligible to be on the Hall of Fame ballot, right? That made him have exactly 10 years pitched in the majors, which is an important part. If you're asking me this last January, my answer would be, well, yes, the Michigan first. But if he finishes with, let's say, only a handful of seasons beyond that dominant stretch, I think it'll be a tougher road for him to get there. But the thing about Hall of Fame voting is that it's 5 years after you've retired. And when people look back on his career, they will look at him from 16, 17, 18, 19, and what he did there, and not be looking at, oh, the Rangers won the World Series and he barely pitched, and all the recency bias that you were getting in your mentions. So I do think he's a Hall of Famer, but it would be great to see him do what he did again for a few more years to make him really, really solid.
All right. So here was at the heart of my argument about him. And yeah, once you get 10 years in, you're eligible. And my arguments about his level of dominance, a great stat is adjusted ERA plus. And the number one all-time leader in adjusted ERA plus among qualified pitchers, according to Baseball Reference, is Mariano Rivera is at 205. Bill Foster's at 164. Bullitt Rogan's at 161. Clayton Kershaw's at 157. Pedro Martinez is sixth at 154, and a tick above him is Jacob deGrom at 155. And the fact is, and believe me, I absolutely hear people say the question of whether or not he's thrown enough innings. He's thrown more innings in his career than Mariano Rivera did, right? And he's been completely dominant. So if you're willing to put in relievers, short relievers into the Hall of Fame, based on their dominance in that particular role, well, Jacob deGrom, every role he's had, regardless, he had a stretch, as you know, where he would sometimes work out of the bullpen in the postseason. He's been completely dominant. So that's where I fall on it.
For sure. I mean, I think the argument that he's never been bad.
No.
Look at some guys in the beginning of their career.
No facts.
They had a point where they weren't as good as we remember them. Even if he wasn't that absolute dominant Jacob deGrom, he has never been a bad pitcher, and that certainly helps him a lot as well.
All right, Sarah. Well, thanks for doing this, and I'll talk to you next week sometime.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. The Stone King himself, Brian, writes in, the Red Sox traded Sale. I don't even care what they got back. They just won the offseason. Thanks, Dombrowski, for the worst contract extension in Major League Baseball history. And I've been saying that since it happened.
Okay, Brian, what happens if he goes 14-7 and has like a 3.8 ERA? And he's under contract for the next year or two with the Atlanta Braves. Will you think that it's that bad of a trade?
We'll see.
That good of a trade, I should say. Because I do think, as I was talking with Hembo, I think it's a good trade for both sides.
All right. Justin Simmons, Justin Lance Sim 1 writes in, is it safe to say that the only thing to expect from Alex Anthopoulos is the unexpected? The man has a knack for creating options no one knew existed. The Olsen trade, the Murphy deal, now the Sale trade. Does anyone play it closer to the vest?
Yeah, it's always funny when trade rumors emerge, and you can almost, if you know, you've been working the business long enough, you're like, yeah, okay, that general manager leaked that, or that agent leaked that. With the Atlanta Braves, nothing gets leaked. Like, it feels like we find out about these deals when they actually happen. And I've heard from other people that they were poking around about a Chris Sale trade back in July before last summer's trade deadline. So they are convinced that he's healthy and he's going to be productive.
Ooh, very interesting. Gregory Gosnell at Carl's Jr. 9982 writes, and after the Yankees traded for a few starts for Montas over 2 years, why didn't they bring him back on an incentive deal just to justify the trade and add depth to a depleted rotation?
Yeah, I'm not spending, you know, $35, $40 million to justify a trade. Either it worked out or it didn't. And also, if I'm Brian Cashman, I would be leery of bringing in Montas with Rodon and the questions around him physically. Like, there's too much risk there. I'd rather get a plow horse. What do you think, Taylor?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like it for the Reds, but yeah, with Carlos Rodon.
I completely agree with you. Like, I think Montas is a good gamble for the Cincinnati Reds. For the Yankees, I just think that they need something more rock solid.
Corbin Lunt at Corbonzo Beans writes in, please give me some hope for my Cubbies. Council will be great, but the team isn't getting any better this year without some additions. Who are they signing?
It feels like they're just waiting and waiting and waiting for Scott Boras and Cody Bellinger to come back to them. And it does feel with what we heard from the Blue Jays on Wednesday that they're kind of the mindset of like, we're not going to spend big again. And that really narrows the number options, potentially the number of teams that would be interested in signing Cody Bellinger, the type of money that he has. So the market feels like it's coming back to the Cubs with Cody Bellinger.
There you go, Corbonzo Beans. Last one for today. This is from December 26th, which I was going through the tweets and I was like, whoa, it's been a while. E-Heart tweets, Elizabeth, she writes in, I hope you all had a very lovely Christmas. Now, where's my emergency podcast about the Blue Jays signing Kevin Kiermaier?
Elizabeth, I'm assuming that you agree with Emma and I, like, just betting on guys who struggled in 2023 to bounce back in 2024 does not seem like a good strategy for the offense. And Taylor, you were busy with another podcast when I was talking with Hembo, but I said they should absolutely sign Joey Votto. Bring him into camp as a non-roster invitee. Have that conversation ahead of time. Look, if it doesn't work out, then we might wind up releasing you. But Joey Votto, Toronto native, left-handed hitter, high on base guy, obviously very motivated, friend of the pod. Let's go Blue Jays.
I hate to say it because it makes so much sense and I'd be so happy for Joey and being back home in Canada. But it makes sense and it would be good for them. But secretly, I'm hoping it doesn't happen.
All right. Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Hembo and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.